Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Imagine this. One day, millions of people around the world simply disappear. Some of them are your family members, neighbors, and coworkers. For those left behind, there's grief and bewilderment. Some view it as the rapture, the biblical prophecy come true. But others aren't so sure. And the only thing that's certain is how uncertain the world and the future appear to be. Well, this is the premise behind Tom Perotta's new novel, The Leftovers. Perotta lives in Belmont and came in recently to talk about his novel. He told us about why he was drawn to the idea of the rapture, the sudden disappearance of millions of people.
I had been interested in the apocalyptic genre, and I think a lot of the other scenarios are very well-worn. You know, you have the zombie apocalypse, you have the epidemic, you have the nuclear holocaust. The rapture actually is one of the biblical scenarios, and it's one that has not really entered popular culture in the same way that some of those other ones have. And I think it actually serves as a great metaphor for living with loss. I think we all, as we get older, are very conscious of the fact that people who were with us aren't there, and we have to keep going. And you know, the rapture is just a, kind of a beautiful poetic metaphor for that.
The Leftovers tell the story of one American town and one family, the Garveys, as they struggle to come to terms with the disappearance of all those people. Here's Perotta reading a brief excerpt from his story about the suddenness and randomness of this cataclysmic event.
Depending upon your viewing habits, you could listen to experts debating the validity of conflicting religious and scientific explanations for what was either a miracle or a tragedy, or watch an endless series of gauzy montages celebrating the lives of departed celebrities, John Mellencamp and Jennifer Lopez, Shaq and Adam Sandler, Miss Texas and Greta Van Susteren, Vladimir Putin and the Pope. There were so many different levels of fame, and they all kept getting mixed together. The nerdy guy in the Verizon ads, the witty political consultant, and that chick who'd been dissed on The Bachelor. It made sense at a time like that for people to stick close to their loved ones. There was an almost unbearable tension in the air, a mood of anxious waiting, though no one seemed to know whether they were waiting for a logical explanation or a second wave of disappearances. It was as if the whole world had paused to take a deep breath and steel itself for whatever was going to happen next.
That's Tom Perotta reading an excerpt from his new novel, The Leftovers. And Tom Perotta, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Oh, same here, Anthony. Thank you.
I was trying to imagine you coming up with this list of this sort of random list of well-known people who disappeared. Was that fun putting that together? I mean, John Mellencamp, Vladimir Putin, the Pope, the Latin American tyrant, the witty political consultant, and that chick who'd been dissed on The Bachelor. I love the list of people who disappeared.
Yeah, you could go on forever. I think it is amazing how many celebrities and levels of celebrity we hold in our heads. And, you know, I was just trying to do justice to the range.
This idea of living with loss, is this something that you've been thinking of a lot lately because of personal experience?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I haven't had an especially difficult life in that sense, but I'm 50 years old now, and my father died about 10 years ago. And, you know, many of, he's one of seven brothers, and two of them are left. And just very conscious of the way that generation, you know, is leaving us, and conscious of, you know, people that I've known and worked with and cared about also. The book is really not so much about the big event, but the aftermath.
Right.
And we can think of various crises that we've lived through, and there is that moment of anxious waiting when people aren't sure what's going to happen next.
It's really about how one suburban family struggles to make sense of the world around them. What does this event do to them?
In the Garvey family, they have not actually lost a member of their family. So they're a little different from some of their neighbors. But even so, they've been powerfully affected by this event. And The father is a guy named Kevin Garvey. He has been elected mayor of the town of Mapleton. He sees his mission as sort of getting the town going again, just saying, okay, this terrible thing happened. Let's remember it. Let's, you know, respect it, but let's move on. You know, that's in the past. We don't understand it, but we have to live with it.
Meanwhile, his personal life is sort of in tatters. I mean, he's dealing with or trying to come to terms with the trauma within his own family.
Absolutely. Well, his wife has had the exact opposite reaction. His wife was deeply traumatized by the fact that her best friend's daughter was taken in the rapture or in the sudden disappearance, whatever this event is. She's decided that this is a sign from God that the way that they're living just is no longer viable. And she has had an extreme religious reaction and joined this sort of grassroots suburban cult known as the Guilty Remnant. She sort of moved across town and is living in a compound. These people dress in white. They take a vow of silence. And they chain smoke as a kind of proclamation of the fact that they no longer believe in the future.
It's so interesting how the various constituencies respond to this event. And one of the things I was struck by in the book is the religious folks don't really accept it as a religious rapture because, of course, they've been left behind. So how could this be the calling home to God of that the rapture is supposed to represent?
That's right. The point of the rapture is that it's supposed to separate the faithful Christians from the rest of the world. And this particular disappearance seems to be random. It doesn't discriminate on the basis of religion or sexual behavior. And so it creates a crisis of meaning, especially for religious people. And that crisis opens up a space for various new kinds of religious expressions. And that was, you know, probably for me writing the book, the most interesting thing was to imagine these extreme religious creations. There are three different cults in the book. There's the Guilty Remnant, there's the Barefoot people who are sort of a hippie group, and then there's this Holy Wayne movement, people who follow this healing prophet.
Holy Wayne, the guy who has the power to hug and take your pain away, or at least he claims
right.
to. Yeah. This idea of these religious groups sort of stepping forward, I was sort of reminded of the idea, nature loves a vacuum. I mean, it seems like this event has sort of created this spiritual and sort of existential vacuum, and people like Holy Wayne have sort of stepped into it to exert their influence in any way they can.
Right, and I think, you know, I wanted to talk about the roots of religion in deep collective trauma. I think when something happens that people can't understand and there are people who need comfort, that's the time when I think new religious experiences can occur.
Well, of course, this idea, living with the absences, did 9/11 influence the writing of this book in any way?
It did, though not directly. I mean, I certainly wasn't writing a parable or an allegory about 9/11. But I think that one of the things that struck me when 9/11 happened, there was just a sense of this is our new reality, everything will be different. And, you know, the fact is that 4 or 5, 6 years later, it had already been absorbed into the past. It started to feel like something that had happened a long time ago. And, you know, it's always surprising when it happens, when you think something is just so huge that it will never be forgotten. It will never sort of fade into the past. And yet, even with events as large as that, and some events, you know, wars and plagues and things that are even more destructive and horrifying than 9/11, they also get absorbed into the past, and you know, cultures and societies and individuals keep moving forward because that's what we do.
Mm. I read a review of the book in which you were quoted as saying that your perspective has darkened over the past few years, that you no longer believe everything is funny like you might have before.
Yeah, well, that might have been a failing on my part. But, you know, I think I started out thinking of myself very much as a comic novelist. And even a book like this that's extremely dark has some comedy to it. But I've begun to sympathize with people like Woody Allen who, you know, there's the joke of, you know, we loved your early funny stuff. I think most, you know, think of Philip Roth, who's a writer I you know, deeply admire. And he was just, you know, the funniest writer in America, you know, in the 1960s and into the 70s. And now I think he's you know, he's a pretty stern writer who's looking at mortality straight in the eyes and not flinching. And I do think if you have a long career, your concerns do change and they do follow the arc of your own life. And I do notice that my own work is dealing with more serious stuff and that some of the comedy isn't there. I mean, I'm not finding it in the material the way I might have in the past.
Author Tom Perrotta's new book is called The Leftovers.